What's going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to the latest episode of the Pure Sports Pod. This is Matt Weirich along with Kevin Haswell coming at you in the middle of a March Madness where we have seen some absolutely crazy upsets, most notably number 16 UMBC upsetting UVA, the number one seed, the first time that has ever happened in the tournament. Kevin, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. I mean, massive amount of upsets today. Right before we tape this episode, Cincinnati goes down to two seed Bearcats, fall to Nevada, and then you got earlier today, UNC goes down and Michigan State. I mean, got to be a lot of angry people out there, brackets being busted all over the place, but it's the best time of year for that. You get caught up in this, you're kind of happy that these upsets are happening, but then you're getting screwed by your bracket. So it's kind of you're trading off. But you know, what a time to be alive. March Madness is great.
Yeah, I mean, this is something nobody's ever seen before, especially in UMBC. Unfortunately, we're not going to be able to get to talk too much about them because they are playing Kansas State as we record this podcast, currently up 12-8 with 10:56 left in the first half. So we will not be able to dive too much into them, but I did want to talk a little bit about that UVA game. Kevin, what are some things that stood out to you with the Cavaliers? You know, they were seen as the number one team coming into the tournament, and for them to lose in the first round, I mean, you know, we've kind of gotten used to seeing this from UVA, but not on this big a stage.
Yeah, you know, the problem with UVA in that game was, you know, their defense just broke down in the second half. I mean, going into halftime, it was, you know, give or take 5 points between the two teams. But UMBC came out hot in the second half. They really hit every shot they needed to hit down the stretch. And I think UVA really missed DeAndre Hunter. In the second half, when they really needed some three-point buckets to keep themselves in the game, they just weren't falling. Ty Jerome and Kyle Guy couldn't carry that team, couldn't carry them all the way back. And it all comes down to, I don't think UVA was really built to win games that go 60-plus in points. They only scored 54 points against UMBC, and, you know, the Retrievers scored 74. And, you know, once, you know, they got well over 65, 70 points, I knew the game was over. The problem with UVA was, I think everyone got so hyped up on their defense, everyone forgot about how bad their offense was. And, you know, that was the downfall in this game. And it's unfortunate, you know, first one seed to go down in NCAA basketball history. And, you know, it's one that we'll always remember. But, you know, for basketball fans, it was a treat because it was historic. But, you know, hats off to the Retrievers. And, you know, at this point, I'm rooting for the 16 to see to continue winning.
Yeah, I mean, this was the first time all season that UVA gave up over 70 points. Its previous high was to West Virginia on December 5th in a game that UVA actually lost before going on that big streak before losing once again to Tech. So, I mean, this was a team that looked pretty unbeatable as long as, you know, they could limit you from behind the arc. But with UMBC shooting 50% from threes, that kind of just wrote the book for them. And we've seen this from UVA in the past of not being able to go deep in the tournament. And there were a lot of people questioning Coach Bennett's future prior to this season. So you'd think that, you know, they're not going to let go of him here. But with a rough year next year, we could be seeing a change in guard there for the Cavaliers. So definitely an upsetting game for them. But in terms of the tournament as a whole, I think it makes for great basketball, gets, you know, great storylines, getting to see a team like, you know, University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I mean, who's talking about them? But here we are, you know, they've already beaten the number one seed, so honestly, the road is only easier from here, facing Kansas State now. So, I like their chances. We'll obviously see what happens in this game, but we'll go ahead and look at two number 11 seeds. These are games that happened today that we can talk about in Syracuse and Loyola Chicago. Loyola Chicago topped Miami, number six seed, followed by Tennessee. And then Syracuse over on the other side of the bracket goes against TCU and then Michigan State today, winning a close one, even though a lot of the team was in foul trouble. Kevin, which of these two teams stands out to you as the biggest contender to go deeper into the tournament?
Yeah, I gotta go with Syracuse. Their defense has been terrific. We've talked about this on, you know, past episodes with the UVA, and, you know, I just talked about how everyone was so hyped on this UVA defense, but, you know, they faltered. They didn't play great defense against UMBC, and Syracuse continues to play great defense. I mean, multiple times this year, they've held teams that are averaging over 80 points a game to less than 60 points in a game. And, you know, they did it again today. I think Michigan State is averaging right around 80 points a game coming in, and Syracuse held them to 53 today. You know, Syracuse is offense, you know, not that great this year. You know, they're 300-plus, 350 teams, most offensive categories. So, you know, they're not really NCAA tournament caliber offense. But if they can keep up this stout defense and this timely shooting, I really like their chances. We'll see how they play against, you know, one of the best offensive teams in the country. They got Duke coming up. The two-seeded Blue Devils blew out Rhode Island in their round two 25-point win. So, you know, I like Syracuse more than Loyola Chicago, but hats off to the Ramblers.
Yeah, I mean, both games were, pretty exciting. With Loyola Chicago, you know, winning on that big three at the end to send them to the next round. And then today against Tennessee, another close one, a one-point win. So I like, you know, obviously playing in close games, being able to close that out is huge. With Syracuse, they were able to do so against Michigan State and coming from behind. But I really just like, you know, this energy that the Loyola team brings. You know, they're coming out of nowhere, like I said, kind of about UMBC, not really talked about, whereas Cuse has been a program that, you know, with Boeheim at the helm, you know, you get a lot of attention, of course, and then also just being a program like Syracuse. But, you know, with the foul trouble that Cuse was getting into, and they you know, have had some injuries in the front court this season, I really don't know if they're going to be able to sustain going deep into the tournament. A big testament to that is they only played, you know, seven players in their game against Michigan State, despite the fact that starting guard Frank Howard fouled out. You know, that kind of shows that they really don't have a lot of depth. They don't, especially Boeheim doesn't have faith in their depth. And by the end of this tournament, we might see some players a little more tired than we would. And of course, going against Duke, one of the most prolific offenses in the country, I'm just not sure if I can justify picking Cuse to go any farther into the tournament. Whereas Loyola, you know, aside from just being a good story, their timely shooters have had, you know, an impressive couple of wins, and now they're going against a seven seed in Nevada, who just topped Cincinnati, like you said earlier in the show. So I think, you know, just the seeding in general gives them a good spot, and they're in the same bracket as UVA. So with a 14 seed and a 15 seed currently squaring off, one of the two is going to win between Kansas State and UMBC against Kentucky, and then the winner of that could theoretically play Loyola Chicago for a bid in the Final Four. So I think Loyola Chicago has the easiest path as any, especially with that number one seed taken out of the picture.
Yeah, you know, I kind of see what you're saying there. I mean, they have to play Nevada while Syracuse is like Duke. Syracuse does have, you know, the film on Duke. They're in the same conference. So they've already, I'm not sure if they played this year, but, you know, I mean, they know them a little bit better than Loyola Chicago knows Nevada. But also, Chicago Loyola is going to also have to play Kentucky, who's one of the hottest teams in the country. I think at the end of the day, Kentucky comes out of that region to the Final Four. Who do you think comes out of that region? You know, those four teams, you got a 5, 7, 11, and a potentially a 9 or 16 seed. Where do you think the Final Four team lies between those four?
I mean, you got to think Kentucky's the favorite here. I mean, not just being that top seed. I mean, a lot of people were saying that Kentucky was underseeded anyway coming into the tournament. I mean, obviously they haven't had the same year maybe that we're used to seeing out of Coach Calipari's teams. But at the same time, you know, they have the experience in coaching. They, you know, have had a couple of five-star recruits that maybe didn't turn out to be the players that they thought they would be. But at the same time, you know, they are still, you know, highly regarded players, very good in high school. And, you know, their strength of schedule was fourth in the country, and they still came out 26-10. So for them to, you know, go through such a grind all year and still come out of it with 26 wins, I think is incredible. And, you know, I really would not be surprised if we saw this team in the championship. I mean, you know, looking down with UNC going down in that bottom bracket, it's really Xavier now as the top team that conference, and probably Michigan there as too. You know, it's not as maybe stifling as, you know, Duke on the other side or Villanova. I think right now the two best teams in the country that are still alive in the tournament are Duke and Villanova. And for right now, it looks like, you know, they won't be seeing either of them until the championship.
Yeah, I think you also have to, you know, talk about Gonzaga. I mean, their road could get a lot easier tonight if Florida State can upset Xavier. Gonzaga, you know, slides right in to the Elite Eight, and they'd have to play either Michigan or Texas A&M. I really like the way Gonzaga's playing. You know, they just beat Ohio State by 6. You know, a close first-round game, but that's to be expected. I mean, everyone's playing tough in those first-round games. I think Gonzaga has a chance to also make a Final Four run as a, you know, a 4 seed or lower. And, you know, did you watch the Michigan game last night? That was insane. That buzzer beater, that's why March Madness is so great.
I know. We've seen just so many finals like that already. I mean, every year I kind of have to, like, think about, all right, last year was insane. I got to temper my expectations. Not every year is going to be like that. Every year is like that. There's always buzzer beaters. There's always great storylines like Loyola Chicago, you know, going through throughout the entire bracket. So this has just been awesome to watch. And I'm looking forward to Michigan, Texas A&M. I mean, Texas A&M blew out UNC. It wasn't even close. So for these two teams to face off, I think that's going to be a great game.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, those type of game are the, you know, the games you're talking about that have been so amazing. I mean, that's what happens when you pack 48 basketball games in the same, you know, Thursday through Sunday span of some of the best teams in the country. I mean, it comes down to the slightest of margins, and, you know, it's awesome to watch.
Whoever designed March Madness deserves a huge pat on the back because they created one of the greatest sporting debacles in history. But that's going to wrap us up for March Madness. We'll be back on Thursday to talk about some Sweet 16 games, what's been going on. But we don't want to talk too much with a lot of teams and their futures not being decided yet. So we'll be back on Thursday to dive a lot more into March Madness than today. For now, though, I do want to talk about the Warriors. The Golden State Warriors are suffering from several injuries right now, most notably Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson, and Steph Curry. Kevin, obviously the Warriors are going to finish with the top 2 seed in the Western Conference. That doesn't really, you know, bother them. Even if they don't come away with that number 1 seed, they're still going to have a very favorable schedule leading up to the Western Conference Finals, in which they would obviously submit home court advantage to the Rockets in Game 7. Kevin, do you think that there is anything to be worried about with these injuries? Maybe long-term issues, maybe, you know, not rolling into the playoffs? What's your take?
No, I think it's tough. You know, the way they're playing right now, their best player on the floor is Draymond Green. They don't, you know, like you said, they don't have Durant, Curry, Thompson, Patrick McCarr, or Omar Caspi. So, that, you know, those are a lot of big names. You know, McCarr and Caspi are especially important because both of those guys provide some depth to this team in the playoffs. And, you know, the big issue I see with all of these injuries is not these guys coming back. It's being reinserted into the lineup come playoff time. You know, it's really tough to take, you know, they're not playing well right now, but it's really tough to take a bunch of players and throw them back into the lineup and everyone changes their roles. And it's, you know, it's really tough to overcome. I could see the Warriors falling to, you know, maybe the 3 seed. And they're, you know, usually one of the best defenses in the NBA and they're 10th in defensive rating this year. So I'm a little concerned about the Warriors. It's really hard for me to say, you know, I'm out on them because these guys are going to come back, and I have a lot of hope in what Durant and Curry can do this for this team. But at the same time, I mean, you have to look at it with a little bit of a pessimistic view and think that, you know, it might not be like seasons past where, you know, they can just reintegrate these guys into the offense and be the same team that they were before. So. You know, I'm a little concerned about the Warriors, but we'll see. The Rockets continue to play well, so that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think the Warriors are going to be slipping out of that number 2 seed. They're 9.5 games up on the Blazers, and with only 11 games left, they're probably not going to, you know, fall enough where the Blazers can pass them for that number 2 seed. However, you're right in that it's definitely no joke being sliding players who are rusty back into, you know, play rotations, especially when, you know, everyone is giving it their best in the playoffs. It's definitely not, you know, an automatic boost necessarily. What I do like is that, you know, this does give some players the opportunity to showcase their skills. And we're seeing a lot of Quinn Cook, who scored his career high in points in back-to-back games in Curry's absence, scoring 28 against the Suns. So, you know, I think, and 25 against the Kings. So I think that, you know, while this necessarily isn't good, obviously having your players hurt could, you know, that injury might creep up in the playoffs, and then, you know, you have a real big issue. Any of those three guys are out, you're going to have some huge problems. But if, you know, if everyone comes back healthy, this is honestly giving some players a chance to, you know, prove that they might be able to be relied on a bit more in the playoffs. You know, obviously it's a small sample size, and we've seen with some other teams. But as far as the Warriors go, you know, nobody really talks about their bench, how it's fallen off in this year as opposed to previous years. And like you said, that defensive rating, it's taking a huge hit because a lot of their rotation guys were very solid defenders. And with them slowly being phased out of the team as contracts have to be, you know, handed out, I think that, you know, this is good for the team just to kind of gauge some of their players a little bit more because, you know, you don't get to see a lot of them.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they might find some hidden gems, and I really like what I've seen out of Jordan Bell this year. I mean, you know, the second round pick by the Warriors, he's, can't find him. There he is. So, you know, 4.8 points, 3.6 rebounds, a block a game, just over 14 minutes. He's been providing a boost while these guys are out. I really like Steve Kerr getting to really find out some of the hidden gems in this roster. I mean, there's a lot of guys that are filling in that are very talented. But, you know, would you put money on the Rockets to win the Western Conference? I mean, it's tough at this point. I mean, I don't know what to say.
I mean, I think the Rockets were already busting into that level of conversation that we have. I mean, obviously the Warriors are the favorites until they're beaten. But it's the same as the East right now, you know. I think there is not necessarily – I think there's a disparity between the Celtics, Raptors, and then the Cavs. I think that there's definitely – the Cavs are not as good. As we're seeing, they're not really clicking with that new offense, and it's kind of hard to do that midseason, obviously. But as far as the Warriors go, I think the Rockets brought themselves to that level. Last year, I thought they were, but, you know, obviously the way they played in the playoffs wasn't enough. I think that this year's team just how they played throughout the year. I mean, James Harden is the MVP. You know, Clint Capella is one of the more underrated players in the league. And of course, there's Chris Paul and Eric Gordon, you know, who get talked about as some of the more prolific shooters in the NBA. So I just can't bet against this team right now with the way they're playing, especially coming off of that massive winning streak. I don't think anyone's playing better than the Houston Rockets right now. Maybe the Blazers, but as far as, you know, who the best team in the Western Conference is, I've got to go with the Rockets at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, at the end of the day, it's going to be a very interesting Western Conference. It's going to be tough because I don't see who the Warriors are going to match up with Clint Capella. I mean, he can be a gigantic mismatch for them. You know, the way Harden can lob to him will provide really that paint presence that has given the Warriors trouble in the past. And he's fast up and down the floor. He's not slow. You know, watch out for Clint Capella. If, you know, he has a big series, and, you know, whenever they meet in the playoffs, this should be very interesting. You know, the way James Harden has played, I think he has to be hands down the MVP. So, you know, Rockets, very good. Warriors, you know, sitting back and just waiting how they develop, to see how they develop after these guys come back from injury, but yeah, like I said, the Western Conference is very intriguing right now.
Yeah, I mean, if we had the playoffs today, we would have a matchup of the Warriors-Spurs in the first round. And talk about, you know, difference from a few years ago when these two teams were facing off in the Western Conference Finals. I mean, you know, they're completely different clubs now, obviously with Kevin Durant now in the Warriors and Tim Duncan no longer on the Spurs. But this is, you know, with the Spurs trending downward, I don't think that they're going to be able to pose a threat to Golden State. I mean, obviously, if Golden State lost in the first round, that would be absolutely, you know, crazy. But, you know, having experience against them, I think that would just make for a great matchup. But after that, you know, it's the Rockets conference to lose at this point. 55 wins on the year. You know, they're gunning for 60 right now. And I don't know. I can't bet against them. And I think the Western Conference playoffs are really going to be pretty exciting because if you look down the list right now, let's go through winning streaks just without naming teams. 4 in a row, 1 in a row, 12 in a row, 6. The Timberwolves have lost 1. 9 in a row, 3 in a row, 1 in a row. All teams but one right now are on winning streaks that are currently slated to be in the Western Conference playoffs. So it's pretty incredible to, you know, what we're witnessing right now.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. I mean, a lot of hot teams at the right time. I mean, a couple days ago, I was looking at the standings, and the Jazz were in 10th place, and, you know, they've moved their way up to 5th already. I mean, there's such a small margin for error for a lot of these teams. It'll be very interesting to see down the stretch who really locks up those playoff spots, because I think there's only two games separating the 3 seed and the 10 seed. So, you know, a lot of not a lot of room for error for a lot of these teams, and I'm really excited to see who gets left out.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this with Mitchell on the podcast a couple weeks ago, where we talked about the Spurs. You know, we've got 4 teams tied for 5th right now at 15.5 games back from the Rockets, 571. They're all 40-30 at the time of this recording. And then you have the Clippers and Nuggets, who are 2 games back of them. So of those 6 teams, 4 are going to make the playoffs. And while, you know, all due respect to the Clippers, and I'm really surprised they've hung around for as long as they have, but they just don't seem like playoff material. The Nuggets might be able to sneak in a little bit, but with the T-Wolves, Jazz, Spurs, and Pelicans, I mean, those are 4 very good teams, and I think the Western Conference playoffs are really going to shape out to be, you know, one of the better ones we've seen. I feel like we haven't had a lot of drama in the first couple rounds. I mean, with the Warriors and Cavs being as good as they have been the past few years, there hasn't just been a lot of room for excitement, and this year feels a little bit different. You know, obviously it's tough for 2 teams to make it to the finals every year for how many years in a row, but this year, I don't know, something feels different in the water, and I think we're going to be seeing a different team other than, you know, at least either the Warriors or the Cavs. I don't think the Cavs have what it takes with the roster that has right now. I think, you know, Cleveland is certainly led by the best player in the NBA, and, you know, they have a lot of good supporting players. They're going to be, you know, among one of those better teams, obviously, just because of LeBron. But I feel like it's just not a complete team the way it stands right now, and I can't pick Cleveland over Boston, or, you know, maybe Toronto, but Boston clearly to me seems like the better team between the two.
Yeah, I don't know about that. At the end of the day, the Celtics haven't been playing well over the last couple months either. So to pick the Celtics to beat the, to beat the Cavs, I'm not sold on it. I mean, I don't see anyone in the Celtics shutting down LeBron. I think this is more of a revamped, younger, a little bit more hops. I really like this Cavaliers team. I think the Raptors are kind of pretenders at the top. The Celtics, you know, they're good, but, you know, Kyrie Irving is banged up. Some other guys, Marcus Smart just had surgery. There's a lot of issues with that team. And then, you know, you go down the standings after that. You got the Wizards, Pacers, Sixers, Bucks, Heat. I don't see any of those teams, no disrespect to Trust the Process, don't think any of those teams could go to the NBA Finals. So I think it's basically between the Cavs and the Celtics, and I just can't see the Celtics winning a 7-game series against LeBron. I mean, they showed last year that they could get there, but they're just not good enough. I mean, maybe with Gordon Hayward they would be, but who knows how healthy he'll be if he comes back in time. And, you know, I think LeBron's going to win the Eastern Conference one more year before he heads west.
I don't know. I mean, I think giving Kyrie a team opened up a lot of doors for him. He's having, you know, a great season, averaging 24 points a game, player efficiency rating 25. And I don't know, Jason Tatum, one of the best rookies in this class, Al Horford, a very underrated power forward who, you know, isn't given a lot of credit for what he brings to this offense. You know, I do really like him in the post game. I think he's one of the better power forwards in terms of that that they have. But they also just have so much depth. I mean, you know, you go from Marcus Morris, Terry Rozier, who had a triple-double in his first career start. Marcus Smart, very good point guard as well, able to bring up the ball when he needs to, but also can play on the wing if needed. I really like this team. And, you know, if Gordon Hayward comes back, that's only going to make them better. Well, like we talked about earlier, you can't just, you know, throw a guy in there after an injury and, you know, expect him to play exactly how he did before. But I think, you know, anything you can get out of him is a bonus at this point. But I just really like everything about this team. And I don't know, I'm worried as a Wizards fan as to, you know, how deep the Wizards can go if they have to play against the Cavs, the Celtics, because of the way the seeding, you know, keeps shaking up. One day, you know, one team's in third, one day they're in fifth. You'd have no idea really who's going to shake up where, but over the next like 11 or 12 games. But I think the Celtics and Cavs are clearly the two best teams. And I can't see the Raptors holding either of them off.
interesting series, you know, between the Celtics and the Cavs when it comes down to it, because the Celtics are, you know, 16th in offensive rating and then first in defensive rating. Cavs a little opposite. They're towards the bottom of the league in defensive rating, but towards the top of the league in offensive rating. So two teams, kind of opposite styles. It will be interesting to see if, you know, the Celtics defense can really slow down that Cavaliers offense, especially LeBron James. And then the other way, whether the Celtics can, you know, keep up with LeBron. I mean, offensive rating of 16th isn't, you know, amazing. Yeah, it's middle of the pack, about average. So definitely would be interesting. I'm really excited for these NBA playoffs. I don't know about you.
Yeah, definitely. That's going to wrap up our NBA portion of the show. We'll finally move over to the NFL, where we have been seeing a flurry of offseason moves. If you hadn't had the chance to check out our last episode, we did talk a lot about the quarterback market and how everything kind of shook out with all the free agency signings and some of the trades that happened. So if you haven't checked out that video, that podcast, you can go to our last one and give it a listen. I highly recommend. Now, we did have a trade since that show between the Jets trading with the Colts to acquire the number 3 overall pick in the draft. However, New York did have to pay a very steep price, giving up the 6th overall pick this year, as well as both their second rounders this year and a second round pick next season. So, you know, this is the cost of getting a quarterback these days. They clearly saw that the Bills moving up in the draft was a very big, you know, threat to them. They were trying to, these are the two teams that we determined last episode, that, you know, really need quarterbacks right now. So with the Colts not really targeting quarterback, they could afford to drop down a few slots. And wow, did they really get a return?
Yeah, I mean, they moved down 3 spots. They're still projected in most mock drafts to pick the same guy, defensive lineman out of North Carolina State, Bradley Chubb. So they're still getting the same guy, yet they got 3 second round picks. And more. So it's a win-win for the Colts. You can obviously see the Jets are trying to go after a quarterback here. I think it's going to end up 3 quarterbacks are taken with the 3 first picks. We'll see who goes where. But I think the Jets really, you know, could sense that they might not get a quarterback if they wait, the quarterback they want, if they wait till 6th. So, you know, they traded, you know, a king's ransom for that pick. But it's also very interesting because, you know, they're moving up 3 spots for, you know, 3 second round picks, but they just signed 2 quarterbacks. They just signed Josh McCown and Teddy Bridgewater. So one of those players may be cut if they go out and get a quarterback with this 3rd overall pick.
Yeah, I mean, I think the motive here for the Jets was to leap past the Bills. The Bills traded up, they traded tackle Cordy Glenn, to move up from their 21 slot to number 12, and they certainly had, you know, that pick to offer the Colts to move up to that number 3. I think it was a competition between those as to who could offer the better package, but with the Jets being able to offer that number 6 pick, plus going 3 second rounders between this year and next year, I mean, that's such a high price. I'm not sure if 3 picks necessarily work it, especially because the disparity among quarterbacks in this draft. I really don't think, you know, if you wait until 6, you probably will have your choice of the 3rd or 4th best quarterback, which, you know, obviously not having the 1 or 2nd or 3rd best quarterback certainly hurts you, your chances. You know, if you think, okay, Giants and Browns are definitely going to pick a quarterback 1st and 2nd. So say, you know, Darnold, and Rosen are the first 2, you still got your choice between Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen at the 3rd pick. Okay. If you move down to the next pick down, I really don't think that, you know, maybe one of those 2 guys get taken, but I can't imagine all 4 at the number 6 pick, all 4 quarterbacks having been taken. And so they must really be sure that whoever that 4th quarterback is, they don't think will pan out, whether that's Baker Mayfield, whether that's Sam Darnold, whoever it is. But I just don't understand how you can really think that those 3 picks are worth the difference of 2 quarterbacks. Because to me, you know, from my humble projections of quarterbacks, I really don't think that, you know, Baker Mayfield or Josh Allen are really a significant drop off from Sam Darnold or Josh Rosen, especially, you know, projections are all over the place right now. Nobody knows if they're going to be great or they're not going to be. You know, we've had drafts before, most notably recently with Andrew Luck and RG3, where everyone was sure that they would both be, you know, bona fide starters for the rest of their careers. Obviously, they didn't pan out with RG3, and Andrew Luck has dealt with injuries, but at the time, everyone was sure these were the two guys, and that's why the Colts paid such a high price to get Andrew Luck, because they were 100% sure that this was going to be their guy. So for the Colts to, for the Jets to make this trade, they really had to see a big difference between that number three and number four quarterback, and I just don't think that there is that difference right now.
Yeah, you know, I'm looking at some mock drafts right now. A lot of them have Sam Darnold going number one to the Browns, Josh Allen going to the Giants number two, and then Baker Mayfield three. So from this mock draft I'm looking at right now, Josh Rosen doesn't get until 15th. Looks like his stock's dropping a little bit. And Baker Mayfield, I mean, is him and Josh Allen's stock is going way up. I mean, Baker Mayfield was considered a late first-round pick for a while in a lot of mock drafts. Now he's slipping into the top 10. I think there's a real need for quarterback in the NFL, and it'll be very interesting to see where all these quarterbacks lie, because a lot of how successful these quarterbacks are is the situation they end up in. And I don't know about Baker Mayfield with the Jets. I just don't see the situation there for him to succeed.
Yeah, I mean, regardless of who they get, I just think that the Jets have a lot more than quarterback to figure out. I mean, they haven't been a great team for years. I mean, Mark Sanchez was the last quarterback to lead them to a playoff game. In how many years has that been? Josh McCown had a great year for them last year, throwing for almost 3,000 yards. Good, not great, touchdown to interception ratio. But a 94.5% passer rating. Their running game definitely needs some work. Their defense has been very up and down in recent years. So for them to give up all of these picks, I just don't see, them rising to a contender in a year. With the Browns' move so far, I could see them being a contender. That is not saying they're going to make the playoffs, but they could be a contender next year if they, finish out the draft with some solid picks. We'll see how they navigate and everything. I think they could come out as contenders. With the Jets right now, with that trade, I think that takes them out of the conversation because they have so much more. When Bilal Powell was your leading rusher last year and Robbie Anderson was your leading receiver, I mean, you're going to put this quarterback, obviously, you're going to have a starter above him. He's going to train under him, which seems to be where the league is going, by the way, with quarterbacks. He's going to have some time, obviously, to get better. But you want to be good too, to give this player some exposure. And if one of your quarterbacks goes down, you're going to have to throw your backup in there, which could be whoever you draft, especially if you decide to cut, one of those two quarterbacks that you signed prior to the year. And I just don't see this being a great contingency plan for that. So if you're going to trade up for a quarterback, I really think you have to be 100% sure they're going to be a bona fide starter, one of the great ones. And I just don't think, even from the Jets' perspective, that they see those quarterbacks that way. I think they see them as very good quarterbacks, but with, very tough to project ceilings, and that's where, the issue lies for me.
See, I just have a hard time to believe that they traded up. They must have a guy in mind, and they must think they could get him at number three. I don't think you give up three second-round picks unless you're 100% sure you're going to get a player. So they must have a quarterback in mind that they believe that they can get with the with that third pick. So we'll see. I think a good option for them would be Baker Mayfield, but we'll see if that's the right situation. I don't know if there's a quarterback in this draft that can really take a team from nothing to the playoffs, but we'll see.
Yep, I mean, front office has a lot of work to do before we start seeing them, playing competitive games. Obviously, playing in the AFC East, you're going to have a tough road ahead of you, obviously, with the Bills at the top. The Patriots, sorry, I don't know why it's the Bills. Bills did make the playoffs last year, though, so if they do end up with a decent quarterback, maybe that is the entire motive, is that they just don't want the Bills to take them out of AFC wildcard contention. Because, playing in that division, they're going to see him twice. If the Bills can beat them both games, that really hurts their chances. But I just don't see this 5-11 team, making that jump. And that's where I just have the biggest issue with all of it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. If you could pick one of these teams towards the top of the draft that could, make the playoffs next year, it would have to be the Giants, wouldn't it be?
I can go back and forth. The Giants had a ton of injuries. So certainly, they have a big issue. I think the Broncos still have a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. Where they might be able to turn some things around if they have some bounce back years. I mean, their defense was actually a lot worse than a lot of people thought. I mean, in terms of, you know, offensive rank or defensive rank, they allowed the 22nd most points in the NFL. Now, they didn't give up a lot of yards. They gave up the third least yards, but that point total is very concerning. So I think they're definitely going to need some bounce back years. I definitely could see them. Obviously, with the 49ers, the way they play at the end of the year, I think that's pretty self-explanatory. And then the other team is the Texans. The Texans were dealt a ton of injuries. Obviously, losing, you know, one of the best defensive players in the league and J.J. Watt for the year was huge. But Jadeveon Clowney has really, you know, been that playmaker for them. He had 9.5 sacks last year. Started all 16 games. Has been very dependable for them. And of course, you got to give you know, your starting quarterback an entire year would also be, you know, very helpful. Deshaun Watson could have been Rookie of the Year had he played an entire season. So getting him back, I think, for the whole year, getting Lamar Miller for a whole year, I think the Texans can make a jump next year for sure.
Yeah, mine has to be the Giants. I think getting Odell Beckham back, you know, we'll see what they do in the draft. I think they have a lot of potential there. You know, if I was the Giants GM right now, I'd go out and get Saquon Barkley. I think putting him in that offense adds another weapon. I mean, they spent a ton of money on a new offensive lineman, but you know, they still need that talented back that they don't have yet. I mean, Jonathan Stewart's all right, but I think the Giants have the greatest potential to make a run in the playoffs next year. But yeah, also the Texans as well. I mean, Deshaun Watson. You know, if he kept up his play, he might be an MVP candidate as a rookie. And then you put back maybe J.J. Watt and Jadeveon Clowney in that defense. They're very scary, too. But it's very interesting that this year, unlike a lot of other years, there's a lot of teams in the top 10 of the draft that have the potential to make the playoffs the following season. That's not usually how it is. It's usually the bad teams. It's usually the bad teams that are just really bad and really need the picks. But this year, it's a lot of teams that had a lot of injuries last year and are now benefiting through the draft because of those injuries.
Absolutely. I mean, also looking up and down this thing, the Giants aren't a sure bet to draft a quarterback. I mean, imagine if they draft Saquon Barkley, number two. You know, that trio, if Eli Manning can have any kind of comeback next year, I think that trio between Odell, Barkley, and Manning can work very well. You know, Manning has worked well off the play action in the past, and I think obviously adding Barkley to that mix would be huge. And if that happens, then I think the Jets trade pans out a lot more, simply because they're able to choose the top two, one from the top two quarterbacks in the draft, which is huge. And I think honestly, if the Giants are looking at, you know, not taking a quarterback, they should honestly entertain the Bills on what kind of offer they'd be interested in. Because if the Bills can leapfrog the Colts, that would be huge. For them, in terms of selecting a quarterback, you know, it'd be a huge damper on, you know, what the Jets had to pay for that trade. You know, now if you're the Bills right now, the package that the Jets gave to the Colts for the number three pick, I think that package, being able to leapfrog a division rival and take the number two quarterback in the draft in a deep draft of quarterbacks, would be a perfect trade for the Bills. So if they're willing to make that kind of deal, I think the Giants should go listening. I don't know, Kevin, you cover the team a lot more than I do. Do you think that's something they would be interested in doing?
Yeah, you know, the GM, Dave Gettleman, I mean, he's been open to trading that pick. But we'll see. I mean, it's kind of smart for a team with their talent on their roster right now to move back, get some assets and some draft picks. But, you know, we'll see. I think the right offer has to come across the table. And as yet to be seen, obviously, because they haven't made the deal, so... you know, moving forward, I think it's smart for the Bills to maybe move up if they want a quarterback. And the Giants would be smart to move down. But, you know, there's got to be the right deal for both sides.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think that Nathan Peterman isn't the starting QB moving forward for them. So I think that, you know, this is a very big opportunity for the Giants to bolster their squad. Because, you know, while they definitely had some injuries and look like bounce-back candidates for sure, you know, it can't help to add volume of players. You know, they certainly had some areas that could have used maybe a bit of a pick-me-up. And certainly their secondary, which they're tearing apart as we speak, is going to need, you know, a player or two to fit in there. If they can get another second-round pick and to add an extra player in the defensive, the DB core, I think that that would play huge dividends for them. And of course, you know, the Bills are a team that need the deal. With Nathan Peterman throwing the 5 picks in his first game, it's how he's always going to be remembered. But he didn't play much better in the other appearances he had as well when Tyrod was dealing with injuries. So this is clearly he's not the future. I think, you know, the Bills now look at him kind of like the Broncos look at Paxton Lynch. Just kind of, you know, we tried, didn't work out. You know, second round pick QBs have not been doing well in recent drafts. Look at DeShone Kizer as well. Just not really, you know, panning out for him. So I think that this is an opportunity for the Bills to rectify their mistakes and trade up as long as they're willing to, you know, go for it.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little more time before the NFL draft, so a lot more opportunity for these teams to move up or move down if they like. I think there's a lot of potential with the depth at quarterback this year for those moves to be made, but. You know, you got to be really motivated to give up 3 second-round picks to move up just 3 picks in the first round. Still shocked that the Jets would make that kind of deal.
Yes, sir. All right, that is going to do it for our show. Before we go, just wanted to run through. Clemson is absolutely destroying Auburn 75-37 with 7.5 minutes left in the second half. So they will most likely be moving on, whereas UMBC is down 5 to Kansas State at halftime. So I'm definitely going to be tuning into that game after the show ends, but... And, of course, Xavier is leading by 1 over Florida State. So enjoy the rest of the games tonight. Hope you all did enjoy them last night if you're listening to it on Monday. And we will be back on Thursday for our next episode. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter at Pure Sports Net, like us on Facebook at Pure Sports Network, and check out our website at puresportsnetwork.com. Don't forget to like and subscribe on iTunes. I am Matt Weirich. This is Kevin Haswell signing off. Kevin, any final words for the good people?
Keep the madness going and trust the process.
And go Nats. Thank you all so much for listening and have a good one.